Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 13 lines from the top of Kuf Tes Zayin. You will notice a diamond in the middle of the line. This is a marking, one of our series markings that we started during our previous shiur on Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis. There, we had noted that these diamonds represent a series of questions regarding that which you can save from a fire. Ibaya Loho, the Gemara asks, and actually before we learn the Gemara itself, we glance at the sign under our Nosei, our topic heading, where we've written Hatzolus Gilyonim. The Gilyonim are the Shulayim, the borders, Shel HaSefer Torah, the borders. It's the white border that you have on above the columns of writing, between the columns of writing, and at the bottom of the Torah scroll as well. Those are the gilyonim. So we're dealing with the saving of the gilyonim, mipnei hadleika, from a fire. Ikur she'elas ha-gemara mechuvenes lemikre. The main question of the Gemara is focused on an incident shenimchak Ksav HaSefer Torah, where the writing of the Sefer Torah has been erased, v'nishar ha-gilyonis, and the borders, ha-shulayim, they remain, shehoyu misaviv l'mokom ha-ksav, the white area, the white border that was around the written area. That's the basic question, and that becomes clear as the Gemara unfolds. So we go back to the Gemara, ibay alaho, ha-gilyonim shel Sefer Torah, Matzilin Oysum Ibn HaDaleka, O Ein Matzilin Oysum Ibn HaDaleka. Is one allowed to save them from a fire on Shabbos or not? And as we explained in our previous shiur, when we speak about saving, we're talking about taking it out from a private domain into a jointly held enclosed area that is lacking an Eruv. And if we weren't talking about a holy scroll and a Shabbos incident, but rather a regular Shabbos day, and the issue involved carrying something out of a house into this courtyard that lacks an Eruv, so one would not be allowed to do that rabbinically. In other words, it's not a Torah prohibition. It's all in all, it's all an enclosed area. It's all a private domain, but rabbinically, there is a restriction of carrying something into a jointly held domain lacking an Eruv. So our question has been raised. What about the saving from a fire of the gilyonim, the borders of a Torah scroll? Toshma, we have a Tanaic source, and you'll notice these triangles appear as attempts to answer this question, and you'll notice how the triangles continue down the Omid a number of occasions. We'll also notice a double underline marking where the Gemara's response in each case is the of a similar nature. Hence, we use another series marking to emphasize that occurrence. So our Gemara brings a source in Toshma Sefer Torah Shibola, a Sefer Torah that is worn out. If there remains 85 letters, kagon parshas vayivin tzoron, like the number of letters you find in the psukim that constitute the parsha vayivin tzoron, which is in Sefer Bamidbar, in parshas Baloscha, so matzilin. If it has these 85 letters, which corresponds to the number of letters in that section, so you would save it. V'im lav, ein matzin. If you don't have the 85 letters in this worn-out Sefer Torah, so you do not save it. V'amai, why do you base the saving on the letters? Even if there aren't any letters, tepuk le mishum gilyonin, Gilyoin Didei. Why not say that you would save it because of the Gilyoin, the borders that remain? So that would indicate to us the fact that that's not a basis for saving. So this would show us that the borders are not grounds for saving it from the fire. The Gemara reacts and says, Bolo Shaini. This Tanaic source features a case of Bolo. Bolo means something that's worn out. So let us take a look at the Rashi. Bolo Shaini. The Kevon Shebolo, since we're talking about a Sefer Torah that is worn out, it's not something that's merely erased. It's a more advanced situation where it's worn out. Af hagilyon botel, even the borders lose their significance. V'chi mibaya lei, what we are asking about, shagilyon kayomim elo shaksav holach. Something that's worn out, from my understanding of Rashi, is that even the borders are worn out. So there's very little left. What we are asking about is where the borders are totally intact and only the writing is erased. So Bola Shaini represents a more severe situation whereby only if there are letters would there be a justification for saving it. But this doesn't address our question. The Gemara continues, Toshma, Sefer Torah Shenimchak. The triangle represents another attempt to answer our question. Here the source features a Sefer Torah that's erased. If after all the erasure is there, there remains 85 letters, which is like the length of the section of Vayibin Tzoron, so we would save it. If there don't remain 85 letters, so we will not save it. So once again, the question is, or the proof we should say brought from this source is that the only basis for acting in a saving capacity is based on the letters, not based on the borders. The Amai, Tepukle Mishum Gilyon Didei, why not establish or learn out that there is a saving to be done because of the borders of the whole Sefer Torah? So the Gemara responds, Mokom haksav lo komeboya li. When you're dealing with the part of the Torah, the section of the scroll where the writing was, and the writing is erased, so that is, in other words, where you have erased writing, and now you have whiteness. That area, in fact, has no significance. The chikadosh, the area on which the writing originally appeared, its whole holiness was agav ksav hu de kadosh, only because there had been writing there. Ozal ksav, ozlo la kedushose. When the writing is erased, when it goes, when it's gone, so the sanctity is gone. Ki kome boyali, our question of the gilyonim is not the white that's left after the writing is gone, but rather we're asking about shalmala v'shalmata, shebein parsha l'parsha, shebein daf l'daf, shebetchilas ha-sefer, shebesof ha-sefer. What we're asking about are the white borders that are up on the top part of the Torah scroll, on the bottom part of the scroll, between the columns, between the different sections, at the beginning of the Torah scroll and at the end of the Torah scroll. So the Gemara asks, well, let's go back to the last triangle that we had. We spoke there about a Sefer Torah Shenimchak, an erased Sefer Torah. So granted that we're not going to say we're saving based on the 85 letters, and we're not saving based on the section of the scroll on which the writing previously had been present. But the tepukle mishum hahu, why not still conclude from, why not say that we should have, be able to save? Why doesn't this source where we just with the last triangle source, why doesn't it say that you save based on the borders that were around the written area? Now, it doesn't say. It doesn't say that you would save based on the borders. So it would indicate to us that Gilyonim is not a basis of saving. And that would answer our question. The Gemara deflects this question and says, Degayiz Vishadi. In the source that we quoted at the last triangle, in fact, the borders have been cut away. And you were left only with what's called the Mokom Haksav. And if the borders are cut away, and all you have is where the writing had previously been present, so granted now you have a lot of white area, but since the writing is gone, that white area doesn't have any holiness. And as far as the borders are concerned, they've been cut away. So the question cannot be answered from this source. Toshma, we continue with another source. Hagilyonim shel mala v'shelmata. Shebein parsha l'parsha. The white margins above and below. The white areas between the sections of the Torah. Shebein daf l'daf, between the columns. Shebetchilas ha-sefer, shebesof ha-sefer. That is, the white areas that are at the beginning of the book and at the end of the book. Mitamen es hayodayim. They communicate a rabbinic form of tumah known as tumas yodayim, whereby if someone touched the gilyonim, he would need to wash his hands before he would handle truma. If he would handle truma, which is the tithe given from produce to kohanim, if he would handle it after touching a sefer Torah, so the truma would be defiled or contaminated, if you will. They would be the truma would become tome. What do we see from this? We see that the gilyonim have Torah significance. So the Gemara says, no, you can't prove our question from here. It's Dilma Agav Sefer Torah Shiny. It could be that the Gilyonim here are part of a regular Sefer Torah that was not erased. The whole Sefer Torah is intact. And as a result, the Gilyonim have their significance. But we're not asking about a Sefer Torah that's intact. We're asking about a Sefer Torah that was erased and the borders remain and a fire breaks out. Can I save that from the fire? So this source is not sufficient because this is talking about a complete Sefer Torah with all the writing in place. Toshma. So we try again. And we should point out, we didn't point this out earlier, but the triangle direction changes in our markings. The first two sources were brought in basically to show that the gilyonim is not a reason for saving. The most recent source was brought in to show that the gilyon would be a reason for saving. Hence you can see the reversed triangle, the inverted triangle. And here you see another source with the triangle pointing up again, because in this source we're going to try to show that the gilyonim are not a basis for saving. So toshma hagilyonim v'sifrei minin ein matzilin oisam mitnei hadleika. The borders, gilyonim, and the sifrei minim are books that were books or scrolls written by the minim. Rashi here calls sifrei minim mishorsim l'avodah zarah. The kusvim turdivim ksivim ksav ashur shloshan kodesh. It's something like today you might call a missionary Bible, but this is a Torah scroll written by people who served idols. So those are the Sifrei Minim. Ein Matzilin Oisim Emnei Adleika. They are not to be saved from a fire. Elo Nisrofim B'mekoimon Hein Vaskrosein. They are to remain and be burnt where they are with the names of the Almighty that are in them. My Lav. From this source do we not conclude Gil Yoinim the Sefer Torah, and mentioned in this source Hagil Yoinim. So does that not include the borders of a Sefer Torah? No, it's not a reference to the borders of a Sefer Torah. Gil Yoinim de Sifrei Minim. It's a reference to the borders of the Sifrei Minim, of the idolatrous Sefer Torahs. The Gemara asks, Hashto Sifrei Minim Gufayu Ein Matzilin Gil Yoinim Mibaya. If you're going to say it's a reference to the borders of the Sifrei Minim, that would seem to be unnecessary, because once you tell me that the basic Sifrei Minim you do not save, does it need to be said that about the borders of those works? Hochi Ka'omar. So the following is the proper way to understand the source. The Sifrei Minim Harei Hein Kegil Yoinim. The Torah scrolls of the Minim, the non-believers, are like blank. It's like blank parchment. In other words, they have no significance. But as far as our question is concerned, it's not resolved from this source. Gufa. The Gemara now quotes in full that which we made reference to a moment before in passing. Under our nosei, the topic heading on the side, we have written Sifrei Minim Bidaleko, the works of the Minim, the skeptics, the non-believers, and in the context of saving from a fire. The source. Hagilyonim v'sifrei minim ein matzilin oisim le'adleko. This is what we just saw quoted. We don't save them from a fire. Rabbi Yossi Omer, b'choil, during a weekday, koder es haskoros shebohen. Koder is to cut out, to cut around something, like cutting a hole in something. Here it's koder es haskoros. You cut around the names of the Almighty that are in these apostate Sefer Torahs. That's koder es haskoros shebohen, the goins on, and you would bury them. Vashar, sorfon, and whatever else remains, burn them. Omer Rebbe Tarfon, akapech es bonai. This is an expression, literally means I will cut off my children, but it's a type of exclamation or an oath, if you will. Sheim yavo liyodi, if I were to chance upon a Sifrei Minim, Shani Esrof Oisom the Es Askor Shebahen, I will burn them and the names of the Almighty that are in them. Shafilu Odom Roidev Achrov Lahorgo, even if I were being chased by a murderer, the Nochosh Rotz Lakisha, or I were being pursued by a snake intent on biting me. Nifnas the base of Vodizar, Vain Nifnas the Botem Shel Elu. I would sooner run into a house of idolatry and not run into the house of the Minim. The Minim, one can actually find in certain censored versions of the Shas, or uncensored versions, that on many occasions Minim is a reference to the early Christians. You have to keep things in a proper historical perspective, that here in a Tanaic source like Rebbe Tarfon, who was a contemporary, even a little bit older than Rebbe Akiva, so we're placing you in the time period just at the destruction, or shortly after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Around in common chronology, it's referred to as 70 of the common era, so it's 70 to 100 or so of the common era. Because we know that Rabbi Akiva lived at the time of the Bar Kochva rebellion, so you have a pretty accurate, pretty close approximation of his historical position in time. And at that time, you also had the we'll call the early Christians. And very often in the Shas, the early Christians are referred to by the term Minin. That's the word used for them. So, and that's in contrast with an idol worshiper. The attitude taken toward the Minim is one that is a more serious attitude, or it's a more negative attitude taken toward them than to idol worshippers. The Gemara continues and says, as Rabbi Tarfon says in describing the Minim, I would sooner run into a house of idolatry to save myself than run into one of their homes or one of their places of worship. Shalolu makirin v'koifrin, v'halolu ein makirin v'koifrin. The difference between the Minim and Ovdei Avodah Zarah is that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they are ein makirin. They are not familiar with the Almighty and His Torah, and they worship their idols simply out of their tradition, like their forebears. However, the Minim are people that were familiar with the Almighty and His Torah and rebelled against that. That is a more severe problem. Valeyan Akosav Amr, regarding them, it says, V'achar hadeles v'amezuzah samto zichronech. Rashi explains toward the lower part of the page, the last of the narrow lines, V'achar hadeles v'amezuzah samto zichronech, Zikoron hu biyadcha, you remember the Almighty and His Torah. V'eino shikcholach, it's not something forgotten from you. Elo shishlachta oisi achri hadeles, rather you threw me behind the door. The Gemara continues. Omar Rabbi Shmuel, kal v'chomer. I want to make the following kal v'chomer logic. Uma lasa sholem bein ish liishto. Mind you, to create domestic peace between man and wife, and this is in the case of a woman who is suspect of immorality, the parsha of Sota. Omra Torah, in clarifying the woman's status, the Torah says, Shmi, my name, Shenichta B'kedusha, that is written in holiness, Imocha al Hamayim. If one is familiar with the parsha of Sota, which is found in Sefer Bamidbar, a passage from the Torah was written and then erased or scratched, the ink scratched off over water. And the woman who was suspect of immorality would be made to drink from it. So the reference here of my name that was written in holiness is erased over water. And and this is the will of the Almighty in order to establish the woman's status and hopefully to discover that she is innocent and have the couple come together again. Halolu shematilin kino v'evo v'tachus ben Yisrael v'im shebashamayim, the minim that create create enmity between the Almighty and the Jewish people, halachas kama v'kama, all the more so shall their works be erased. And that's what we saw that Rabbi Tarfon said, I would throw the whole work with the holy names in them into the fire. Valeim Omar David, regarding them, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Halo misanecho Hashem esno uviskoimimecho eskoitot. The ones that hate you, Hashem, I will hate, and those that rise against you, I will fight. Tachlis sino sanesim l'oivim hoyuli. They represent the source of my hate, and they are my enemies. Ukashem shein matzilin oisim in ne'adleko, and just like you wouldn't save them from a fire, the Torah scrolls of the Minim, kach ein matzilin oison lo min hamapolus velo min hamayim velo midovor hameabdon. Likewise, even during the weekdays, you wouldn't save them from a mapolus, an avalanche, or mapolus, something that falls on it, could be a building that that crumbles upon them, nor from water, nor from anything else that would destroy them. In other words, you would certainly leave them to be destroyed. The topic heading that we have on the side is Mifgoshim Im Minim, contact meetings with the Minim. Bo Mine Rav Yosef Bar Chonin Me Rabbi Avo. You'll notice that we have another diamond, so this continues our series of questions regarding things that you save or not save from fires. So Bo Mine Rav Yosef Bar Chonin Me Rabbi Avo. Rav Yosef asks, Hani Sifri Debe Avidon Matzilinus Mene Adleko O Ein Matzilin. We have to resort to Rashi to understand this Debei Avidon. Rashi says Sforim, under the first line under the Gemara, Debei Avidon, he says Sforim Shikosvulem Aminim. These are works that were written by the Minim, Lizvakeach in Israel, in order to challenge the Jews. Umokom Shemizvakin Sham Kori Lebei Avidon. The location where these debates took place was called Bei Avidon. So we're talking about works. It could very well be Torah scrolls that were written for the purpose of arguing with the Jews, arguing against the Jews, debating the Jews. So these Sifrei Debei Avidon, do you save them from a fire or not? This was what was posed as a question to Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo didn't answer, though, with conviction. In the Lav Arafia B'day, sometimes he said, yes, you save them, and sometimes he said, no, you don't save them, and it was Rafio Biode, it was something that was unsure, was loose, literally loose in his hands, but it meant he did not answer with conviction. Rav lo ozol lebe avidon. Rav avoided going to these debates with the Minim, the Kol Shekein lebe natsrafi, and all the more so, he avoided going to the idol worshippers' places. Bei Natsrafi is the name of an idol worship location. Shmuel lebei Natsrafi lo ozil. Shmuel would not go to Bei Natsrafi lebei Avidon ozil, but Shmuel would go to Bei Avidon. Omru le l'Rava. They asked Rava, "My time lo osis lebei Avidon. Why don't you come to Bei Avidon and?" It's very likely. Why don't you come to the debates? Omar Lahu. So Rava answers, and Rashi points out that the answers that Rava gives were simple attempts to evasive answers or avoidance type answers. Omar Lahu, Dikla Planyo Ika Burcha Vakoshili. There's a palm tree on the way from my house to the Bei Avidon, and it has roots that protrude above the ground and that they form like, as I say, protrusions or mounds, and it's difficult for me to walk over that area. So they said, well, now, great, so we'll uproot it. So he says, well, duchte koshili, the spot that remains, if you uproot a palm tree, so a ditch will remain there. Another shot that Rashi gives is that I tried that, and the smell that it leaves is a very unpleasant for me. And Rashi adds, though, here the background that you don't see in the Gemara, you don't see it so clearly, but Rashi adds at the bottom line, "Becholze shoyu misyorin rav v'rova milech ve'avidon." They were afraid to go to Bei Avidon. Shema mitoch sheizvakhu yamdu aleim v'yahargum. They were afraid that, as a result of the debates, and it would appear to me, these great rabbinic figures would probably defeat them in the debates, but that would just endanger them all the more, and with the fear of actual reprisal and fear of being killed. The Gemara continues. Mor bar Yosef Omar, ano minayu ano. Rashi says, I know them, I recognize them. Velo mistafino minayu, I'm not afraid of them. So, Mar bar Yosef, would go there and debate them, and Zimna chados, and once he went, bo'u liskune, and they wanted to, and he was endangered. Apparently he was threatened with his life. Now we have a story. This is what I would like to classify as a Shas classic. You can be the judge of that after you hear this story as well. There's a Maisa. We have a long marking that starts at the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. you'll notice the word mice is written in with a descending vertical dashed line. And to give you a sense of the length of this incident, this mice, just follow the vertical dashed line down on my base and you'll see how long this story is. So the story involves, we'll read it in the Gemara and you'll see, Ima Shalom, Devisu de Rebbe Lezer, Achte de Rav Gamliel Havoi. There's a woman, her name is Ima Shalom, and she was the Devisu, the wife of Rebbe Eliezer, and she also happened to be the sister of Rabban Gamliel. Habahu Philosopha B'Shivavusei. There was a philosopha, sounds very much like the word philosopher. Rashi points out, Min. We said what we did already above about the Minim. So there was one of these Minim in their neighborhood. Dehave Shokil Shmo Delo Mekabel Shochada. He had a Shokil Shmo, means he had a reputation as someone that would sit in judgment and would refuse taking bribes. In other words, he had a name of being Mr. Clean, Mr. Straight, who would not take bribes. But he did in secret. Bo'u la'achuki bay. Bo'u is they, you'll see in the story, it's Rabbi Gamliel and his sister, Ima Shalom, wanted to make a mockery of this gentleman. Ayelo le shrogadidava, Ima Shalom sent to him a gift, a golden candelabra. The ozel le kameh, and she went to him for judgment. She went to him, she had a case, omra le, and she said, Boino de niflegi li benichsi de beinoshi. I want to have a portion of my father's inheritance. In other words, she wants to divide. She wants to receive a portion in the division of her father's estate. And we mentioned before, she, Ima Shalom, had a brother, Rabbi Gamliel. So she, in effect, is saying, I want to divide with my brother. Omar Lahu Plogu. So the Min said, go right ahead, get your portion. Omar Lay, Rabbi Gamliel, interjected and said, Sivlon, it says, in our Torah, B'mokum bro barta lo terus. It says, in the Parsha dealing with inheritance, is that where there is a son, a daughter does not receive an inheritance. That, in fact, is the formal Torah law, that when there are no sons, then the daughter does receive inheritance. And just to keep things straight, we're dealing with strict Torah law right now. We're not talking about all kinds of stipulations and contractual agreements and wills, etc., and so forth, that will provide for daughters receiving portions of inheritance. In the absence of any of those types of legal tools, straight Torah law says, like Rabbi Gamliel says here, that when there is a son, a daughter does not receive a portion. If there are no sons, so then daughters divide the inheritance. Omarle, so the Min, this philosopha that we saw, says back to Rabbi Gamliel, bear in mind, don't forget that this Min received a little gift from the lady. So the Min says to Rabbi Gamliel, Min yoyma de galisin me'arachon, from the day you, the Jewish people, were exiled from your land, isnatilis araisa de Moshe, the Torah of Moshe that you're quoting from has been removed, v'isyahivis sifra achriti, and a new book has been given, uksiv bey, and it says in the new book, bro ubarto kechado yarsun, a son and a daughter as one will inherit. Equality. Story here may smack a little bit of something that's quite familiar to many of us, the idea of the Jewish people being cast away and a new book, a new Bible instituted. And if that sounds at all familiar, here you see it in a very an ancient and original type source here in the Gemara. So the story goes on. Lamochar hoder ayel le ihu chamaluva. The next day, Rav Gamliel sent a little gift to this min judge. A chamra is a donkey, and chamra luva is a type of donkey. Omar luhu, the min then says to the brother and sister, Shilis l'seife de sifra, go down to the end of our new book, v'kosav bay, and it says there, ano lo lemifchas min oyraisu de Moshe Asisi, I didn't come to detract from the original Torah of Moshe, v'lo l'osofe alo raisa de Moshe Asisi, and I didn't come to add to the Torah of Moshe. I am not coming to change anything. Uksiv bay, and it says in the original Torah, b'mokom bro, barto lo terus, where there is a son, a daughter gets nothing. So, you can see a reversal over here, of course, as a result of his new gift. Omro le, so Ima Shalom says, Nehor Nehorech Kishraga. She says, your light should shine forth like a candelabra. Omar le Rabban Gamliel, Osa Chamra Upotash Lishraga. And Rabban Gamliel says, the donkey came and kicked over the candelabra. Of course, they said this in public, making a mockery of this min. The Gemara continues, but before we do so inside, we glance at the side of the Gemara under our No Say heading, Mipnei Ma Ein Korin B'Ksuvin B'Shabbos. Why is it that we don't read from these works on Shabbos? So, as the Mishnah said, Mipnei Ma Ein Korin Mipnei Bitul Beis HaMedrash. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a numbering system accompanied or surrounded by diamonds. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh heading, you can see diamonds with 1 through 3. Gishos Shonos Le'inyan Hanal. These are different approaches to the issue we just mentioned. So you can view the Gemara as appearing in several stages. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav. Lo shanu elo bizman beis hamedrash. The objection to reading from the ksuvim, from the holy scrolls, the Tanakh, the ksuvim of the Tanakh on Shabbos, is only before mealtime. That's what is meant. Bizman beis hamedrash is when the lectures were being held, and which was before meals. Aval shelo bizman beis hamedrash, meaning after meal time, korin, you could read from them. Ushmuel Omar afilu shelo bizman beis hamedrash ein korin. Even if it's not the zman beis hamedrash, it's after meal time, you still do not read from them. The Rashi points out that after the mealtime is called Shalov is Ma'an Beis HaMedrash because La'achrachilu dor shum shichrus. During the meal, people would drink, become intoxicated, and not really suitable or a reasonable state of mind for listening to a Torah lecture. And he was giving the lecture also would be in that state, and hence that's not the time for it. So Shmuel points out here that even Shelo Bizman Beis HaMedrash, Ein Korin, you don't read from these works. The Gemara asks, Eini Vaha Nahar Do Asrei de Shmuel Have. The city of Nahar Do was under the guidance, under the rule of Shmuel. Shmuel was the leading rabbinic figure of Nahar Do. Nahar Do Paski Sidra B'Ksuvah B'Minchosa de Shabbata. And in Nahar Do, they were accustomed to reading in their base medrash parshas sections from the Ksuvim. And Minchosa de Shabbata means in the afternoon of Shabbos. So how can Shmuel be presented here as saying that even Shelo Bizman Beis HaMedrash ain't Korin? Elo Iyitmar Hochi Yitmar. So here we have a restatement, and that's why we're calling this stage 2. Omar Rav lo shano elo b'mokom beis hamedrash. The objection to reading from the ksuvim is only where there is a study center, a Torah study hall. Avol shalob mokum beis hamedrash koren. But if it's not a place of Torah study, if there isn't a place of Torah study, so you can read from there. Ushmul Omar, bein b'mokom beis hamedrash, bein shelo b'mokom beis hamedrash. Whether there is a Torah center or there is not, it all depends on the time. Bizman beis hamedrash ein korin. If it's at the time of the Torah lecture, you don't read from it. Shelo bizman beis hamedrash korin. If it's not the time of a Torah lecture, then you can read from it. The Ozlo Shmuel Tamei, and this teaching of Shmuel is consistent with Shmuel elsewhere. The Benardo in Nardo, which was Shmuel's locale, Paski Sidro, the Ksuvim b'minchosa de Shabbata. They would study from the Ksuvim in the Shabbos afternoon, which is Shelo Bizman Beis Hamedrash. Rav Ashi Omar, Li Oilom Kidamora Mei Kora. Rav Ashi represents a throwback to stage one. That means even after Achila, there would be no study of Ksuvim, focusing, of course, on Shmuel. Ushmuel, Rabbi Nechemya, Shmuel, in his statement of you don't read from Ksuvim, even if it's not the Torah lecture time, is in consistency with Rabbi Nechemya Desanya, and we have him. Rabbi Nechemya is presented in this Tanaic source. His name is underlined a few lines later. It says here, Afalpi Sha'omru, Kisveh Kodesh in Kurin Bohen, even though we are taught that one does not read from the Kisveh Kodesh, from the written Torah, the written holy works of the Tanakh, Avol Shoinin Bohen Vidorshin Bohen. However, to study the Medrash of these works, like the Medrash of Shir HaShirim and Koheles, one is allowed to do that, and he can also lecture on them. Nitzrach leposuk mevi v'roebo. If one needs to cite a posuk, so he would bring one of these holy scrolls and read from them, read the posuk. But to intense study of the psukim themselves, this is something that was not done. Omar Rabbi Nechemya, mipnei ma omru kisvei hakodesh ein korin bohen. Why is it said that one does not read from the kisvei hakodesh? And from the context of this, it would be, why doesn't one read from them on Shabbos? So kidei shiomru, so that people would establish a kal v'chomer, and they would say bekisvei hakodesh ein korin v'kol shekein b'shtorei hedyotos. Mind you, we don't read from holy writings, all the more so we won't read common documents. Shabbos is not the time for reading documents. The Rashi explains Shtorei Hedyotos kigon shel cheshbonos, all kinds of bills, o igros, hashluchos, limtzocheifetzor, letters that one sends, friendly letters, reading letters on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Nechemya, is not to be done. Shabbos is a time for study of Torah, especially in view of the fact that most people were engaged in the pursuit of an income during the week. Shabbos was the primary time for a person to engage in Torah study. And when we speak about Torah study, we're speaking primarily about the study of halacha, of how to live Yiddishkeit, how to live Judaism, and that is accomplished only through the study of halacha. And the pursuit of any other kind of work will detract from the limited time that people have available for Torah study. Hence, all of these different objections to the study of other works, even if they're holy works, but they don't lead to a better understanding of practical halacha, so we avoid it. That's what we're learning here. The Mishnah. Matzilin tik ha-sefer ma-sefer. One can save from a fire. The tik is the covering or the case that holds a holy scroll with the scroll in it. The tik ha-tfilinim ha-tfilin, and the tefillin holder could be the tik, is the, many of you are familiar with the little sack that people keep their tefillin in. So that can be saved together with the tefillin. V'afal pishiyesh b'soichon mois, even if there is cash, there's change in them. U'lehechon matzilin oison, when we speak about saving them, where do we save them? We take them out of the burning house to where? L'movui she'eno mefulosh. A movui is an alleyway. An eno mefulosh means it's not a through alley. In other words, it has an opening only on one side to it. That type of area is a rishus hayochid midoraisa. So, from a Torah perspective, you're not violating anything by carrying it from the house to the movui she'eno mefulosh. What is lacking here is that they did not make an eruv, which is a means of creating a joint partnership or a joint holding in the area. Nevertheless, we're dealing with the saving of a sefer Torah or tefillin from a fire, so one can carry it into the movui she'eno mefulosh. Ben Becerra, Omer Aflim Mefulosh. Ben Becerra goes even further and says, even if it is a through movui, it's open on two ends to public thoroughfare, but you're carrying it from the house into the alley, that is okay. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, and we should say even before we look at the topic heading, the Gemara is going to open up with a topic that doesn't seem related at all to our Gemara. But in the course of the Gemara analysis, you'll see how our Mishnah is brought into the upcoming discussion. So by way of topic heading, under the Nosei on the side, we have Asiyas Tzorchei Hedyot, Agav Tzorchei Govoa. We're going to deal with the allowance, if there is such, of a person tending to his own personal or mundane needs in the context of taking care of something that is of a higher or holy divine nature. Now that, of course, sounds a bit vague. We'll be able to appreciate that only through the examples of the Gemara. But once again, the general idea is to somehow be able to combine personal things that on their own, one would not be allowed to do them. But because you're preoccupied with doing tzorchei govoa, something that is allowed because if it's of a divine or holy nature, maybe in the course of that activity, I can also do something for myself. We open the Gemara with a Tanaic source coming from the topic of a Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach was slaughtered on the 14th of Nisan, and the meat was roasted and eaten at night, the night ushering in the 15th of Nisan, which we call the Pesach night and was more commonly known as the Seder. Tana Rabbanan, Arba Osor, the 14th of Nisan, Shechal Liyos B'Shabbos, that comes out on a Shabbos. Now, the Korban Pesach is one of those special kind of sacrifices that one that is Doiches Shabbos in the sense that you're allowed to slaughter it on the 14th of Nisan, even if that happens to come out on a Shabbos. And a sacrifice naturally has a portion of it, in this case the innards of it, are put on the Mizbeach as the offering to the Almighty. And the offering of the innards is to be done on the 14th of Nisan. In order to get to the innards after slaughtering the animal, they would skin the animal and then cut open the animal to take out that which needs to be removed. How much of the animal is allowed to be skinned? Bear in mind, skinning is a malacha when you're talking about Shabbos. So, and it's called hefshit. So this source says, Arba Asur Shechalis B'Shabbos Mafshitin Es HaPesach Ad HeChozeh Divrei Rabbi Shmuel B'Noi Shor Rabbi Yochanan Broika. You can skin the animal starting from the hind legs, and let's just assume for illustration purposes that the animal was suspended bottom up, meaning the hind legs were higher up, and the face, the head of the animal facing the ground. They would start the skinning by removing the skin from the hind quarters and moving down till the chest of the animal was exposed. Once the chest of the animal is exposed, That's it. According to Rabbi Shmuel, no more skinning. There wouldn't be a total skinning. So you'd have a flap of skin hanging from the animal. And it was open, it was skinned till the chest, which enabled them to remove the emurim. The emurim are the innards, which were put on the mizbeach. The source continues, V'chachomim omrim mafshitin es kulo. You finish the job. The Gemara continues. Bishamol Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. I understand his position, the limited skinning approach. Ta'as avid late sorakavoa, that you are allowed to do that which is absolutely necessary for heavenly purposes. The tzorchei gavoa, the heavenly purposes. And that's a reference to the offering of the innards. So you do whatever is necessary to accomplish the tzorchei gavoa, and that's it. Elo l'rabbonon mai taimo, but the shita of the rabbonon needs explanation. What is the reason for them? So we have highlighted with a house marking rabbonon, and a little bit later, Rabbi Shmuel is highlighted as well, and we'll see the reason for this is why. What does each one do with a pasuk from Mishlei that will be cited? So, what is the basis for the rabbanon? Omar Rabba Bar Chana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, the Omar Kra. The pasuk says, "Kol Paal Hashem Lima'anehu," that all workings must be done for the honor of the Almighty. V'hocha mai l'maneu ika, what is the kavod involved over here? And we're talking about the complete skinning of the animal. The rabbonim allow the complete skinning of the animal because that represents honoring the Almighty. How is there honoring of the Almighty here? Rav Yosef Omar shelo yasriach. The presence of the skin on the animal causes it causes warmth, and if there is warmth, the meat will rot, and it's not fitting. It's not honorable for the meat of a sacrifice to be allowed to rot. So it's an act of honor to prevent the warmth, the heat buildup. So remove all of the skin. Rava Omar Shiloyu Kodshe Shamay Mutolin Kinevela. Rava says that leaving an animal partially skinned with a flap of skin just dangling from the slaughtered animal is a bizoyon. It's lying like a carcass. That's Mutolin Kinevela, which is a sign of disrespect. It's denigrating. My Binayo, what can we cite as an example, a practical example, that would accentuate or underscore a difference between Rav Yosef and Rava? So we have two examples. Iko binayu, de monach apsur de davo. One would be where the partially skinned animal is lying on a golden table. Psora is a table, davo is gold. In that example, it's not denigrating. It's lying on a golden table, so there's no element of mutolim bebizoyon. So you could leave it partially skinned, therefore Rava's consideration wouldn't be in place. However, there still is the warmth element, the fear that it will rot faster, and therefore, according to Rav Yosef, even if it is lying on a golden table, the Rabbanan would tell you, finish the skinning. Inami, another example that will underscore a difference. Yuma de Istana, a day where the northern wind is blowing. The northern wind produces a type of temperature where it won't rot. If you have the Rashi points out the possibility of the eastern wind blowing, that produces warmth and that would cause rotting. Rashi has an alternative shot that the Yoma de Isana is the day that the southern wind is blowing, which is a cool wind. Again, the idea being that if that is the case, so it won't rot. So if the consideration is rotting, so if it's a Yom HaDi'isana, so Rav Yosef, according to Rav Yosef, the Rabbonin will tell you, don't finish the skinning. However, it still is Mutal B'Bizayon, so according to Rava, the Rabbonin would tell you, finish the skinning. Rabbi Shmuel ben Yosher Rabbi Yochanan Broka, according to him, Hai Kol Pala Shemaneu Mai Ovid Lei, what does he get from this Pasuk? The Pasuk was cited as the basis of the Rabbonin before for allowing the complete skinning. Rabbi Shmuel does not allow complete skinning. What does he do with this Pasuk in this context? Answer, Shelo Yotzi Yaseimurim Koidem Hafshota Sa'or. Don't remove the innards before the skinning whatsoever. In other words, Rabbi Shmuel says, remove the skin till the chest of the animal, till the breast of the animal, and then after it's been skinned till the chaze, then remove the emurim. And now, how is there an element of honor in this? My taima, what is the reason for this? Omar Rav Huna Braid Rav Noson Mishum Nimin, because of the wool fibers that would get stuck to the emurim. In other words, if you, let's just say you slaughtered the animal, made a slit in an unskinned animal and reached in to take out the emurim, all the skin and the hair and the fiber, the wool of the animal is still there, and as you're extracting the emurim, all these fibers will get stuck to them, and that's disgusting, if you will. It's not honorable. So Rav Yishmael learns from Kol Pal Shem Lemenu in the context of the Korban Pesach to allow for the partial skinning so as to preserve the cleanliness or the dignity of the emurim. Om Rav Chisda, Om Amar Ukva, Mai Ahadru Le Chavraya Le Rabbi Shmuel Beno Yishel Rabbi Yochanan Broka. What do the Rabbonon say in response to Rabbi Shmuel? The Chavraya are the colleagues of Rabbi Shmuel who allowed a complete skinning. How do they argue? What do they argue back to him? At this point in the Gemara, we have a structure that is important to point out. We will illustrate the upcoming structure using diamonds, and on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading, you will see five diamonds, tshuvos, and a double underline representing dechios, rejections of whatever is going to be said, lema anu chachomin l'Rabbi Yishmuel. So just before we learn the Gemara, let's just scan the page. You see a couple of diamonds here. Hochi Kwamrile is featured, is enclosed in the diamond. This thusly they said to him. And these diamonds, this discussion continues down the Kuf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph, bound down halfway the Omid. So we'll have to, in order to preserve the continuity of the Gemara, to learn down halfway Kuf Yud Zayin as well. So the Gemara continues. Hochi Kwamri Lei. Thusly, they try to argue to Rabbi Shmuel. In other words, they represent an opinion that says, skin the entire Korban Pesach. So how did they advance their position? They said as follows, and at this point, we'll now see the tie-in to our Mishnah. Up till now, you probably were wondering, what is a Korban Pesach discussion doing over here in Maseches Shabbos? So we'll now see the connection. Thusly, they said to him. They quoted from our Mishnah. And by the way, we should point out that our Mishnah, the beginning of the Mishnah, is basically something that everyone would agree with. So the Rabbonon who argued on Rabbi Shmuel ben Noisha, Rabbi Yochanan Broka said, Im Matzilin Tik Im HaSefer. Im Matzilin Tik HaSefer Im HaSefer. If one is allowed to save from a fire, in order to preserve the casing of the sefer together with the sefer, even though there is cash in this receptacle, lo nafshit es hapesach me'oro, should I not be allowed to remove all of the skin from the korban pesach? Let us glance at the Rashi. the Rashi, the last, toward the end of the narrow lines, Tikkim HaSefer, V'afapi Shiyesh B'sochomos, even though there is change in the case holding the Sefer Torah, U'mishim Kavod HaSefer, and because of the honor accorded to the Torah, Shuhu Tzorach Gavoa, the preservation of the Torah is of a divine consideration. Avdinon Bahadeh Hatzolas Mois Shein Tzorach Hedyot. Together with it, we have him saving his money, his cash, which is a personal need, a mundane need. So we see that together with the divine, we allow for the mundane. So the Rashi goes on, Lo nafshides haPesach b'timiyah, should we not be allowed to skin the Pesach mishum tzorach gavoah, because of the tzorach gavoah, the divine, the heavenly need, Lo shori tzorach hedyot b'hadei, will I not make an allowance for a common need as well? And right now the common need is the skin that one doesn't offer on the altar. He keeps that for himself. The owner keeps the skin. So we see, in the case of the Sefer Torah being saved from the fire, we save the money along with it. So too, in the preparation of the Korban Pesach, so being that you're processing the Korban Pesach, skin all of this, remove all of the skin for your own purposes. The Gemara rejects this, and this double underline, as we saw in our Mivneh heading for, represents the rejection of what's being suggested. This will repeat itself, this style of Gemara. The suggestion, and then rejection. Mi dummy, how can you compare? Hasam tiltul. In the case of the Sefer Torah being saved from the fire along with the money, that's a matter of mere movement. Movement is not a doraisa leniency. It's not something that we're not compromising something of a Torah nature. Therefore, it's easy for the Rabbanan to allow that. Hacha melacha. But here, regarding the Korban Pesach, you're dealing with skinning, which is one of the 39 primary prohibited activities of Shabbos, one of the Ovos Melachas. Omar Rav Ashi, Betarti Pligi. The argument between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan Broch, is on two planes. Pligi betiltol, upligi bemalacha. The hochi koamri lay. It's true, we saw, they have a machlokas regarding malacha, but they also have a machlokas regarding tiltol. And this is what they said to Rabbi Shmuel regarding the tiltol issue. The Rashi, four lines from the bottom, says, Betarti pligi, gabi pesach, pligi betiltulo. They argue as well regarding the movement. The also Rabbi Shmuel letaltel ha-pesach, Rabbi Shmuel asers, the movement of the Korban Pesach, achar shehotzi emuriv, after the innards were taken out, afilu mechamu letzeil. Even if your consideration is moving it from the sun to the shade, you're not allowed to do that. Mishum or because of the skin, the lav bar tiltulhu, the skin, this raw skin that's removed from the animal is something that is usur to move. Now, with that background in mind, we continue in the Gemara. We're at the bottom line, v'hochi kvar milei, this is what the Rabbanan said to Rabbi Shmuel regarding the matter of tiltul. Rabbi Shmuel, as we just saw in the Rashi, says you can't move the Korban Pesach because of the skin that's usur to be moved. So they said, Imatzilin tikha sefer ima sefer. If we allow the saving of the Torah scroll in its case that had and there's money there. Lo netaltil or agav basar, should we not allow the movement of the skin, which is we'll call it the problem entity, together with the meat? Rashi adds the bottom second to last line, v'hochi kramile tshuva le inyan tiltol. Rashi continues, lo netaltil or agav basar, should we not allow the movement of the or together with the mi davinami kovod shemayim? There is an element of honor, a heavenly honor, the boser dumya de sefer. If you draw parallels, we parallel the meat to the sefer, umutur letaltalo mechamo letzel, and it's allowed. One is allowed to move the sefer from the sun to the shade. The agav boser yitaltalenu or hamechuber bo, and together with the meat, which we're assuming right now represents something that's parallel to the sefer, move it and the skin along with it. The Gemara continues at the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Omer Aleph. Mi Domi, how can you compare the movement of the sefer together with its receptacle to the case of moving the meat together with the skin? Hosam nase bosis ledover hamuter. In the case of the tick of the sefer, it is a bosis, like in English the word basis. It is a support of something that is allowed. In other words, the sefer. The sefer is something that can be moved even without a fire. Hocha, in the case of the Pesach, nase bosis ledover osur. The skin is a support of the meat. The meat is actually something that is forbidden. What do we mean? Because what do you do with Korban Pesach meat? On Shabbos day, which is the 14th of Nisan, you did what you had to do with regard to the offering of the innards. But beyond that, the meat is eaten at night, Saturday night in this case, which is the ushering in of the 15th. So on the 14th, the meat has no purpose, no Shabbos value, and therefore the skin is supporting something that is forbidden. So you see there's a lack of parallel between the case holding the sefer versus the skin holding the meat. Elo hochi kwam usha, just one detail with regard to the meat. Not only is the meat not eaten on the 14th, in this case Shabbos day, but it must be roasted, and that takes place at night, where you'll roast it and eat it at night, Saturday night. So the meat of the Korban Pesach, when the 14th of Nisan is a Shabbos, that meat has no Shabbos use or value. Elo hochi ko amri lei. Rather, this thusly, the Rabbanan, who are lenient, are trying to argue against Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael, who was restrictive, he did not allow the movement. After the innards were removed, you had to leave the Korban Pesach with its skin right there, wherever it was. So they said, Elohochi kramile imatzilin tik shel sefer, im ha-sefer, fa'falpish yesh besoichi mois. If we allow the movement of the sefer together with its case, even though there is cash in there. Now the cash is something that's usur. That can be parallel to the meat that was just described as something usur. So we do allow the movement of the cash together with the sefer. Lo netaltil or agabosar. Should I not be allowed to move the skin together with the meat? So that even if you say that the meat is usur, but we saw an allowance made with regard to the movement of the sefer together with the kesh. The Gemara says, mi dummy. Once again, there's lack of parallel. Hasam, in the case of the tik, of the case holding the sefer Torah with the kesh, nase bosis ledover usur u ledover hamutar. The tik contains two things, something that is forbidden, the cash, together with something that is allowed, namely the sefer. So there is an element of leniency there. There is a dover hamutter. Hocha, in the case of the Pesach, kulo nase bosis ledover ha'osur. There is no heter element. The meat is completely osur. Not only that, but we pointed out before that the skin was also of no value. It's raw skin is of no value as far as other some use until it's actually processed. So even though we find a leniency with regard to the saving, the movement of the Sefer Torah, together with the cash, that is not parallel to the case of moving the Korban Pesach meat together with the skin. Elo hochi ko amri lei. Rather, thusly, they argued. Im mevin tik. Shiyesh besoichi mois me'almo. Lahatzil bo sefer Torah. Lo netatel or agav bosar. There is a certain assumption being made here, but we will just play along for the time being. And that is, if we allow the bringing of a case that has in it cash from some other location in order to put into this case the Sefer Torah in order to save it, and there's no expectation of my tossing away the cash, so in effect I'm moving a case with cash in it, in anticipation of bringing it to the Sefer Torah. So, being that we allow that, so should we not allow the movement of the or together with the basar, the skin together with the meat? Now, this is going to be brought into question. And that's what the Gemara does now, and the Gemara asks, "Behi gufa minola," meaning who says that that is allowed? And with that in mind, if we just skip the bracketed section for a moment, we come on to another approach, so that we see that the number four suggestion is in effect rejected, because there is an assumption that's made, and we'll find in the brackets that it's not a reasonable thing to argue. So that afterwards, Elo Omar Mar Bravashi, he says what he does, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. So the Gemara here asks, "Vehi gufa menolan." From this point itself, how do you know it? This idea of bringing a case with money in it, with cash in it, in anticipation of eventually putting a Sefer Torah into it, and you're bringing the case with no expectation of tossing out the money. Well, how do you know that? Vehi gufa menolan, from that itself, where do you know it from? E lemo de midehecha de isbei. Lo shodi lahu, from the fact that in a case where you have, in a situation, the case is actually a pun that we can intend. So in a case that you have a case of holding a Sefer Torah with cash in it, that's cash with the Sefer. And in that situation, we don't tell you throw out the money. Isuye nami maisinon. Therefore, you can also bring a case with money in it to the Sefer Torah, and eventually put the Sefer Torah into this case. Me dummy, how can you compare those situations? Hasam, in the situation where the Sefer Torah was in the receptacle together with the cash already, if you're going to say, take your time and first throw out the money, invert the case, get the money out, and then take the Sefer Torah, well, you're losing time. There's a fire. And in the meantime, the fire might burn them. So where the Sefer Torah is in the case with the money already, so there we have no expectation of tarrying to allow for the removal of the money. Acha, but in the situation of bringing a case to the Sefer Torah, bringing a case that has money in it, acha ada acha v'achi lish dinon. Well, there we would say that while you're bringing the case and running to the Sefer Torah, just turn over the case, and while you're running, and you won't lose any time, the money will fall out. So that we don't have a basis for saying that just like you can bring a case with money in it, who says that you do that such a scenario even exists of bringing a case with money in it? No, if you have a case that you're going to bring to Sefer Torah with that has money in it, you'll simply flip over the case before you bring it to the Sefer Torah. You'll flip it over and run with it, and the money will fall out on its own. Hello? Omar Mor Bravashi. Le'ulom Kidamrinon Meikora. We revert back to what we said in number one at the very outset. We can simply go back to the first diamond, and the Rabbanan had argued there that if we allow the saving of a sefer of a tick with the sefer in it, a case holding a sefer Torah, even though there is cash, should we not allow the skinning of the total skinning of the Korban Pesach? So the Gemara here continues. And after that argument, you would have asked, like the Gemara did, how can you bring proof to allow skinning, which is a malacha, from a case of mere tiltal, of mere movement, of carrying something from one place to another? So the Gemara answers, and the point of these answers, we have a little aleph and a couple lines later a beis, is to reduce the severity of the malacha aspect. And if we can successfully remove the malacha aspect from our dealing with the Korban Pesach, I'll be able to make the parallel that the Rabbanan are trying to make. And they are trying to say that if we allow the saving of a Sefer Torah with a case that has money in it, so we should allow the total skinning. Now, what about the skinning? So, the skinning, if we leave things as is, you're dealing with a malacha. So the Gemara says, Kigal delo kaboy le laor. We're talking about someone that's doing the skinning, but he doesn't need the skin. He doesn't need it. So, by the fact that he doesn't need it, it's his removal of the skin is what's called dover sheino miskavin. It doesn't have an intent for the malacha of skinning. And once you don't have kavona, you don't have intent for the malacha, it no longer is something that is of a Torah objection. The Gemara asks, but that's not reasonable. For Abaye v'Rava d'Amri Travayu, Moidi Reb Shimon v'Psik Reishe v'Lo Yomus. Abaye and Rava both agree that even Rabbi Shimon, who is lenient with regard to unintended actions, if, however, an action that is being done presents an inevitable malacha result, it will still be forbidden. So that even though you don't need the skin, in other words, your intention is not for skinning, your intention is, let us say, to preserve the dignity of the meat, kol pal Hashem lemaneu, but skinning inevitably is taking place. That's called a psik reshe, and that reestablishes it as a Torah level prohibition. The term psik reshe lomas, we've encountered this numerous times before, but if you're a first time listener, so it basically means psik is to cut off reshe, the head of a chicken, and expect it not to die. That's impossible. So that if you are cutting off the head of a chicken, even though your intention is to get to use the head of a chicken as a toy for your toddler, nevertheless, it's an inevitability that the chicken will die. So that even though you don't have a slaughtering intention in mind, but it's an inevitable result, and therefore it's considered as if you have intent for it. So, back to our skinning issue, even if you don't need the skin, but skinning is resulting. So, the Gemara answers, Deshakil lei bebarzi. We're talking here about the removal of the skin using a barzi as a type of nail. It's a sharp implement, but it doesn't allow, the skin essentially gets shredded while you're removing it. And this is not the normal way of skinning, and therefore it's not a malacha. Malacha is accomplished or is violated only when you do it in the normal way. This relegates it to the realm of a shivus, as Rashi says, and therefore it's a mere rabbinic consideration. And therefore they argued, if you are allowed to save a Sefer Torah and carry it with in a case with cash, so which is of course that's tiltul bi'amah, it's only a rabbinic issue. So too, this form of skin removal should be allowed, and you're thereby not violating something that is of a Torah level offense, and therefore it should be allowed. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.